Explaining football to the friend who's just there for the nachos? Hard. Tailgating from home like a pro with snacks and drinks everyone will love? An easy win. And with Instacart helping deliver the snack time MVPs to your door, you're ready for the game in as fast as 30 minutes. So you never miss a play or lose your seat on the couch or have to go head-to-head for the last chicken wing. Shop game day faves on Instacart and enjoy $0 delivery fees on your first three grocery orders. Offer valid for a limited time. Other fees and terms apply.
It's not just about watching the game. It's about betting on it. I'm Mike Valeni, and on Cash the Ticket, Jim Costa and I break down every college football and NFL match up like it's the last game we're ever going to watch, from the best bets to the sneaky underdogs, and of course, as my co-host likes to say, the value. And the one thing we're not going to do is pretend we're professionals. We have fun with it. It's an entertainment product, and it makes watching games a hell of a lot of fun. So Cash the Ticket, follow it in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, we got Washington and Cincinnati on Monday Night Football. That means Monday Night Countdown leading into that game. There are two games on Monday night, including a Jacksonville-Buffalo game that starts at 7:30. But the main crew, Aikman and Buck, and of course, my good friend Scott Van Pelt with his crew for Monday Night Countdown, will be in Cincinnati on Monday night before Skins Bengals. You want to tell everybody what you did this morning and tell us how it went?
Yeah, so for Countdown, actually our show is in Bristol, because when there are two Monday night games, we are in studio so that we can kind of service both games.
I thought you told me you were going to be in Cincinnati. My fault. But Buck and Aikman are doing the Washington
game. Correct. Yeah. Correct. We'll do Countdown leading into that game, but we'll also be doing Countdown for a Buffalo. It's very involved. No one cares. But what I did this morning was I went out to the park in Ashburn and had a conversation with Jane Daniels, and that will be on Countdown. And I'm sure we're good at making hot dogs at our place. What I mean by that is, I'm sure the conversation that he and I had this morning will end up on SportsCenter and, you know, wherever else. Who knows? Maybe game day. We talked a little college, Baton Rouge, yada yada. So was out at the park, had a chance to speak to Cliff Kingsbury, who I know, met Coach Quinn and Adam Peters, and then we sat down with Jaden Daniels and had a conversation. And what will end up on air, I don't know. But we kind of ran the gamut.
How was he?
I enjoyed it. He was as described, man. There's something about he just carries himself very, you know, he's a great conversation, very smiles very easily, and very, like, he was described to me as incredibly confident and not the least bit arrogant. And that's felt like the young man I met. It was fun to be able to talk as an old timer. You and I are, and I'm sure many of your listeners are, that remember a different time. And, you know, I said to him, I said, look, if I say to you Joe Theismann, Doug Williams, Mark Rippon, I don't even know if that means anything to you. He's like, of course. And, you know, he talked about having a chance to develop a relationship with Doug. And I was like, put on the second quarter, you know. That's kind of fun. But it's just such an interesting idea, Kevin, to meet the young man who so many fans of this franchise hope can get the team back to something like what it once was, have no concept of what it once was.
Yeah, that's true. So Austin Ekeler was mic'd up for the first game against Tampa Bay, and he and Zach Ertz are walking out onto the field, and Ertz hears something about Doug Williams in Tampa. We all know Doug Williams was drafted by Tampa, was really one of the first Tampa Bay stars, took the Buccaneers to the 79 NFC Championship game, and Ertz looks at Ekeler and says, is that the same Doug Williams we know? And Ekeler goes, no, I don't think so. I don't think that's the same Doug Williams.
It just makes you realize that, I mean, even the guys that are vets are still, you know, so much younger than any of us, obviously.
Right. You said something that's actually been described in a similar way by Dan Quinn about Jaden Daniels, that he's confident but not arrogant. And I, you know, you and I talk about these things all the time, but that is a very fine line, or more of kind of an inside straight to hit when you are a young player, whether it's in a new work environment or in pro sports. Like, it's hard to inspire confidence and yet be likable and be self-aware, right?
Oh, totally agree. And in fact, that was something that I was talking to them about how that's a really difficult needle to thread, because the confidence is so necessary. I mean, look at the quarterback play around the NFL. God, it's hard to play this position, evidently. And so you have to have belief and you have to have confidence. But if you walk in as a 22, 3, whatever year old person and have arrogance about who and what you are in a league full of adults, grown men who, you know, some of whom have been doing this for quite some time, I would think that would be incredibly off-putting. And so that's the balance. Have the confidence where people are willing to lead where you follow where you try to lead, but not do so in such a way where everyone's like, F that guy. Like, yeah. He sucks. You know what I mean? And that's, that, again, everyone had described him to me that way. And look, I don't pretend to know somebody. We just sat for a short while. But it was just funny to be able to tell him how many, you know, the fans that I'm friendly with on, like, the text threads, that you're our hope, you know, is so many people are willing to I think, come back to all right, I'm willing to buy in. So we're following him too, right?
Yeah. I mean, is there any sort of nugget that you can share with us, or should we just wait until Monday night?
I didn't go there for any sort of revelatory kind of a thing, right, other than just conversation about, you know, I mean, I think I'd say this, you know, beating a division rival in your first home game, I think was not a relief. That's not the right way to put it. But I think there's satisfaction, understanding how significant that is, how that's worth probably more around here. I'm sure you know, but if you don't, you're going to come to understand quickly. Beating the Giants, the Eagles, and particularly the Cowboys is pretty important around here. But I was just trying to get a sense of, you know, that to me, there's a lot of interesting angles of, he's very friendly. All those California quarterbacks, CJ Stroud, Bryce Young, and him, they went 1-2 one year and 2 the next year. I find that amazing. And sort of what those guys have explained to him about the path. And then the guy he's playing against Monday is part of the LSU fraternity and Heisman fraternity. So he's got a bunch of different people who play the position who he can lean on for advice, which I would think would be incredibly helpful. It's not like he's on some island.
I'm curious about that one, the Burrow relationship, because he wasn't there when Burrow was there, but he was the next great thing after Burrow left. Are they friendly? Are they close?
Yes. Yes, and the point that he made that I found interesting is that I think what they bonded over was that, think about it, Daniels came from Arizona State, Burrow came from Ohio State. Like, they were right. Both transfers. He's a California guy, Burrow's an Ohio guy. They have nothing is Southern or Cajun about them. They go down to the right. Bayou, and they are beloved forever because of who and what they were there. And I think that's the... You know, that's what they bonded over. And he says he has a great relationship with Joe. And now, obviously, I think that Heisman thing is a big deal too. I mean, that's a very select crew, and when you're part of that, that just adds another layer. But I thought that was interesting as well.
What have you thought in watching them? I know you've watched the first two games.
Yep.
What have you thought of him and the team?
Well, I joke with Cliff. I'm like, we got any touchdown plays, or what are we doing? look, you know this, Kevin. You pay close attention, and obviously, to the sort of trends of what do we got. I mean, there have been more field goals than touchdowns in the National Football League through the first 2 weeks, and I think it's obvious to me that running is going to be part of what they are going to want to do, and you understand why. It's a weapon, a true weapon. What, he's got like 132 through two games? And I think there's a certain amount of Commanders fans holding their breath when he takes off just because he's not the biggest guy. But I thought, I think your boy the other night on Monday night, Cousins in the 2 minute, you know, looked, that's why you pay guys big money, win a coin flip game and be great in that moment. Well, the game was there to be won on Sunday, and I thought he was excellent. And that's where I think you see quarterbacks. you've told me this, because I guess Cooley explained it, that that's when maybe they're their most comfortable. He doesn't look uncomfortable to me. Two games is such a small window, and I don't know, Tampa and the Giants, what do we know for certain? I think Tampa's probably pretty good, so that loss doesn't bother me. I think Monday's an interesting spot. I mean, it's a big stage, and Cincinnati's in a pretty desperate position, but I don't know, I've been encouraged.
You've always told me, and Steve's told me as well, that you guys are Kingsbury fans, and that there are a lot of people in college football who are big Cliff Kingsbury fans.
Mm-hmm.
What makes him? Just share with people what people in the sport think of him.
I think they've always respected his play calling acumen and his mind for the game. It's interesting, you know, that whole Texas Tech, there was this kind of, for years, and I was guilty of it as well. Like, I looked at guys like Patrick Mahomes and thought, okay, you're playing this 7-on-7 football. I don't even know what you're doing. It's not football, you know? I mean, that doesn't translate. But then over the past, whatever, decade, certainly, you've seen how much of the essence of that idea and that type of football has translated and been successful. And Cliff's part of that. And I think the fact that he lost his job with Texas Tech and got an NFL job just speaks to the fact that he had always had fans of his football acumen at all levels and continues to. And I don't know. He's just a dude. I've always enjoyed talking to him. We would have him on the radio, and then I got to know him away from that in a way. And so I just think that he has, there's people like that in basketball. There's people like that in all sports where maybe fans are kind of roll their eyes or don't think for whatever reason, oh, that guy, he got fired here, or I don't know, I don't understand. Well, it doesn't matter if you understand, because the people in the sport have the respect for him, if that makes sense.
No, it does.
That's always been the case with him. It's always been the case
Yeah, there are examples of that. We see that pop up all the time. It's like, really? He got another gig? Yeah. You know why? Because people in the sport actually think he's really good at what he does. What did he say to you? You know, if you don't want to share it, that's fine. But what are his early thoughts on Jaden?
He's just such a... So everyone that you talk to out there is just, he's got, it's that it thing, that intangible thing about the way that he carries himself. And I know that he's been he saw it early. And I mean, look, when you come in as an OC, knowing you draft a guy too, and knowing that, okay, this is the guy, right? I mean, I would say, whether it's Cliff with Jaden or any OC and quarterback, you're going to try to be as positive as you can, because it's a whole lot better than if you're like, man, I don't know if this guy can do it, because it's going to be difficult. Look at the rookie quarterbacks. Not one of them has a touchdown pass yet. It's hard to do. But if you feel like the person has the mental aptitude for what they're being asked to do, the physical traits to do it, and then that real intangible, the way that they carry themselves. And Cliff was raved about that. Look, the guy's in there. He's got screens up with whatever. He's trying to figure out how to get a first down on 3rd and 8. I'm not going to go in there and bother him. I just went to say hello. Literally just went in to say hello. And, you know, he and Al try to cross paths when they've got a night off and we can get a dinner and catch up on life. But I don't want to bother him. I didn't want to be bogging down their game planning. So literally it was just a chance to stop in and say hello.
I know they were excited that you were out there. So there's that. Let's talk about the league through two weeks.
God.
I mean,
where do you want to start, man? There's so many things that are wild to me.
Well, let's start with just emphasizing, as we do every year, nobody knows anything.
All right.
Nobody knows anything until how many weeks before we even start to have a clue, other than Pat Mahomes in Kansas City. Seriously.
Yeah, they're the one outlier. I said this somewhere, I don't know where. But they have reached a place with me where it truly doesn't matter what happens. They lost on Christmas Day last year
to the Raiders
on their home field. They'd lost 3 of 4. They were not any good. And I was thrilled because not that they lost. I was thrilled that the thing I had said I wanted forever was I was finally going to get to see Mahomes on the road. And then they went to Buffalo and Baltimore back-to-back, beat them. Then they beat San Francisco. So the three teams that I thought probably presented the biggest challenge to them, they beat in succession. They occupy a space where it doesn't matter if they look good or bad. I'm just going to trust that Reed, Mahomes, and Spagnuolo in that defense, they're good. The rest of it, who the hell knows? It's the Saints win week one, and they're like, well, Carolina's garbage. Well, then we'll see when they go to Dallas. All right, well, what did we see? They scored six consecutive touchdowns. Are they good? I don't know. Maybe Dallas' defense isn't very good. I don't know. So I'd say that you, with most teams, you know, whatever you think you know by the end of this month, you probably have a different idea by Halloween. You probably have a different feeling by Thanksgiving. You probably have a different feeling by Christmas. I mean, things are going to change. Things are going to change. Our perception is going to change repeatedly. Yeah. And that there are teams, Kevin, that are 0-2, like Baltimore, that I'm going to stubbornly believe. I think they're good. But then I look at their schedule, I'm like, well, you better win some games.
Yeah.
You better win
Cowboys,
some games.
Cowboys, Bills, Bengals.
In a row. Yeah. And it's like, man, they got to keep – they got to stop losing games. They've got double-digit leads, and that's happened to them a bunch. Way too much for a good team. Way too much for a well-coached team. But, I mean, I don't know. What do I think I know?
Yeah.
I tell you what I don't know. I don't know why it's so bleeping hard to pass the football. I mean, there were 68 passing touchdowns through 2 weeks. 68. And the reason
so
I make
what do you attribute that to? We talked about this last week after week one. What do you attribute it to?
I mean, there's the whole thing about playing two high safeties, and people are like, all right, just run it. We'd rather let you run it than pass it. Just make you work for it. I don't want to hear the preseason bit about people don't play because that's not new. That's not new.
Although, you know who played a lot in the preseason? Derek Carr.
Well, how about that?
Mel was on your station yesterday screaming about that, but go ahead.
I don't have a theory. I'm not smart enough X and O's wise. Cooley be the guy that is the best
he
at it.
He doesn't watch football anymore. He has no interest in football.
Well, he's just wandering the plane
and building things and
Well, ask him. Send him some All-22 and say
project.
What are I don't get it. I mean you know, you could point to some young quarterbacks who maybe they're not ready. People say there's a bunch of bad offensive lines. I really don't know, but the numbers are jarring. And the reason I brought up 68 touchdowns is because there was a 5-year window from 2018 to 2022 where through 2 weeks the average was 109. So 40 more touchdowns. So an average of 20 more touchdowns each week for the first 2 weeks. And then last year it started to drop off, and then this year it fell off a cliff. I really don't know. And then I would think it's probably going to continue because there's so many significant contributors in the passing game who are hurt already. I mean, there's the laundry list of big time receiver talent that's not playing is only going to make it worse. I don't know what it's about. Yeah. I will say this. I think the teams who are coached by guys who actually aren't averse to kicking field goals, because you get three for that, it's not the worst thing. That's becoming
Sirianni.
That? Come on. I kick a field goal, dude.
What are you doing?
Not late? Early. No, it's fourth and three, and I've got to play for this. Okay. Or I get nothing out of it. Here's another stat that's insane to me. Kickers not named Justin Tucker are 35 of 37 from 50 or more yards.
From 50 plus, yes. Justin Tucker's one out of his last seven.
And Tucker, who's widely accepted as the best, certainly for the last however long he's been doing it, he hasn't made one. And I just laugh. I try to tell younger people, you got to understand, there was this guy named Mark Moseley who kicked straight on and he had a perm. And like people talked about the fact he can make it from like 50. And it was like, wow, he was a weapon. What an MVP. Like now, guys kick it from 59 and it hits halfway up the net. It's just insane to me.
Do you know, I'm looking this up because I've done this before. Longest field goal attempt in NFL history. Mosley's got, Sebastian Janikowski attempted a 76-yard field goal. This is attempts, not makes, because Tucker has the record with 66 yards. But Janikowski kicked one from 76 and missed. But Mosley has like three of the longest attempts that missed in NFL history. He tried a 74-yarder in 1979 and a 70-yarder that same year. He did have a massive leg for back in the day. But yeah, the 50-yard field goal, hell, the 55-yard field goal is what a 40-yard field goal used to be, it seems like.
It truly is. And that's why the other night, just a real quick as a thought on that, because it had to do with where we were on Monday night, which was Philly. That's the part, like, everyone's going to point to the Barkley drop because it's game over for sure. But I think another layer to that Philly thing is like, man, you guys had a timeout. You're only about 15 yards away from Elliott being able to try a long one, and he's shown that he can hit it. That he got a little greedy there late, and Bates picked him off.
Yeah, I mean, once now that you get to start at the 30-yard line, a guy like Elliott, to your point, you're basically 25 yards away from an attempt. And
exactly.
30 yards away from, like, something that he makes regularly.
Yep.
All right. Back to we don't know anything about the NFL. It doesn't stop us after 2 weeks from having hunches.
Sure.
And so let's start in the NFC. Like, I think there might be something real about New Orleans. I'm not sure, but when teams score that many points, I think historically it's an indication that they're legit. But I'll ask you, New Orleans, yes or no, legit or not?
Okay, we talked about Cliff and people respecting him, right? Kubiak's
right.
The guy down there, right?
Yeah.
And that's a guy that people around the league go, he's got some scheme, he's got some ball plays. The thing with them is that Carr has largely been, I think, marginalized. People talk about him for what he's not, or they don't think he's this, that, or the other thing. I don't know. I mean, Shahid to take the top off the defense guy. Olave is really good. Kamara as a weapon. Maybe? I don't know. Like, I'm just not willing to say yes for sure. I feel the same way about Minnesota, but for different reasons there. I mean, they're not wowing you with offense as much as they are with their defense. That Flores defense is you know, they pressure the quarterback like no other team, at least through two games. But, I mean, those are the two 2-0 teams that I think are the surprises probably because they beat San Francisco and Dallas last week. I don't know, are they teams that in 2 months we're still talking about? I don't know.
But you said that you do think Tampa might be good. I actually agree with you on Tampa. He's always been one of my favorites.
Yeah, I know that. And like we do this thing on Monday nights. It's a way to mention the Hemi Awards, just a goofy thing we do. And I gave mine to Todd Bowles the other day because I said I want to acknowledge what this man does. Like had Detroit won that game, we'd have raved about the Lions reflecting the personality of Dan Campbell, who I like a lot. Well, Tampa Bay wins a game. Well, maybe they reflect the personality of their coach. You know, maybe Todd Bowles is a pretty good coach too. This is 3 years in a row. They're 2-0. And Mayfield's got some weapons down there. I believe they're good.
All right. Real quickly before you roll, two things college football related. You're disappointed.
Yes.
I was disappointed with the loss to Michigan State. But do they recover? Are they 5-1 Maryland with USC coming to town or not?
Indiana's going to be a difficult game. Apparently, I think they can do it. I watched them some against UCLA last week, and they look like a very, very clean operation, man. They do what they want on time and score a lot. So, I mean, Villanova, you're clearly supposed to beat. Northwestern at home, you should beat. So you should be 4-1. So to me, the Indiana game is the question. And I would think they'll probably be an underdog given the way Indiana's played.
Give me the teams right now that you would short in terms of the teams perceived to be national championship contenders and those that you would absolutely buy in right now.
I I watched Mississippi play some the other night, and how about this? They had a home and home with Wake.
Yeah,
at the end of the game, at the end of the game, Wake's like, "Listen, here's what we're not doing. Coming to the Grove next year. We'll see you later." I mean, think about that, Kevin. Think about being emasculated to the degree that you just said, "I don't care what it costs. I'm not going out there and playing them." I think them and now Tennessee's in an interesting spot this week. We're going to learn a whole lot more about them when they go to Norman to play Oklahoma, where they're a touchdown favorite. That's wild to me. Wild. I like Tennessee and Ole Miss a lot just because I think the ease with which they do offensively it's frightening to see. They're not stressed. Everything's easy.
Right.
In terms of who I'd short, and I'm not trying to dodge the question, I just don't know enough about teams who haven't played anyone in their weight class, you know? So I don't know. I mean,
well, what
I
about
know.
A team that didn't play somebody in their weight class and nearly lost, Georgia?
Well, oh, no, I'm not worried about them. That to me was that was a classic human nature spot. Kentucky looked like absolute they were horrible.
Against
South Carolina. I figured that, like, Stoops runs a good program. I thought there'd be a whole lot of pride on display in the game against Georgia, and there was. So I don't have any issue with that. I mean, the Coach Corso line, and it's the best line about college football, I think, is that you never get the same team week to week because you're dealing with so many variables, not the least of which is, you know, a bunch of 18 to 22-year-olds. So I don't have any problem with Georgia playing a close game. It's going to happen. There's Penn State played a game against Bowling Green where they were trailing at home in the first half. I mean,
that was a bit of a letdown spot right after West Virginia.
For sure, the same way. Look, Notre Dame lost to Northern Illinois. I took Purdue last week at home. They got beat 66-7.
Yeah, picks in college not so good so far.
No, my picks are so bad. It's just,
it'll come.
I don't know. I mean, I think, but if
you
got to
hit 16 against a 10, just keep doing it, and it's the right thing to do. We both know.
You know that, and I know that. My viewers, your listeners, do not know that, and so I know I'm going to get heckled, and I should based on the way picks have gone. But you can count on one thing. My dumb ass is going to keep going the same way, baby.
Last one. Is there a team that you have watched through 3 weeks that isn't in the conversation right now that you think will be in the conversation at the end of the year? I have one, and I'm curious, but I want to hear yours first.
In college?
Yeah.
Who's yours?
Well, I actually have a couple of them, but I think Nebraska's legit defensively. And the schedule, they have Ohio State and USC
later. They don't play anybody until Ohio State.
Exactly. So I think they, you know, and that could be a loss, and they could still end up being a potential playoff team out of the Big Ten.
I like Kansas State. I think the Big 12 is fascinating. Reese Davis had a great line that our buddy Stanford Steve mentioned on our podcast. That Reese said the Big 12 isn't the deepest, but it's the widest. And I love that description because – there's just no easy out on anyone's schedule in that conference. So I don't know who the best team in that conference is, but I really like Kansas State. I feel like – and you and I had this conversation. I think you said you were talking about it on your show last week, that's just always a program you've kind of always followed and thought was interesting. Their quarterback's dynamic. He can run it. I think they might really be good defensively. They didn't give up a lot of points to an Arizona team that tends to score a lot. So, I mean, that's not a fringe team, but I don't feel like Kansas State's the name everyone's saying, you know, right off the bat.
No, you're right.
Hey, they're really good. But I don't know. It's early there, too. But, I mean, we'll start to get some answers here. People start playing, you know, you get in the ring with somebody that at least could hurt you with a punch as opposed to, you know, Ohio State playing Marshall every week.
Yeah, and we've got so many good games coming up. All right, thanks. You know, per usual, you were very generous with your time. Thank you.
I got nothing to do, and I'm always happy to do it. Good to talk.
All right, Jaden Daniels with Scott, Monday Night Countdown, and perhaps at several other hot dog stands between now and then. Thank you. I'll talk to you later. When we come back, Denton's got five burning NFL questions for me. That's next. Kevin Sheehan Show, Team 980 and Team980.com.
Explaining football to the friend who's just there for the nachos? Hard. Tailgating from home like a pro with snacks and drinks everyone will love? An easy win. And with Instacart helping deliver the snack time MVPs to your door, you're ready for the game in as fast as 30 minutes. So you never miss a play or lose your seat on the couch or have to go head-to-head for the last chicken wing. Shop game day faves on Instacart and enjoy $0 delivery fees on your first three grocery orders. Offer valid for a limited time. Other fees and terms apply.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
What's better than watching your team win? Winning money while you do it. I'm Jim Costa, and on Cash the Ticket, Mike Valeni and I give you the edge to make every game playable. College football, NFL, we're breaking it all down game by game. Your podcast feed is going to be filled, and you're going to love it. You can click on the games you care about. We do it all. With our analysis, we're finding games that other people aren't talking about. We're turning every Saturday and every Sunday into days where you got a chance to win. Don't just sit on the sidelines. Cash the Ticket with us. Follow Cash the Ticket in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
You know, the points, the passing yardage and the passing touchdown numbers are really down after 2 weeks. And we didn't get into it. He had a couple of answers. I think the answers lie somewhere in what we talked about last week, Denton. Young quarterbacks, running quarterbacks, more dual threat quarterbacks in the game than ever before. He mentioned it, and I think it's true. Offensive lines, there are many more bad offensive lines in the league than there are good offensive lines. By the way, through 2 weeks, and I don't want to get into PFF or next gen or advanced numbers right now because it's just 2 weeks, but Washington's offensive line looks pretty good in pass pro in particular. You have the exodus of a lot of, you know, Hall of Fame quarterbacks over the last few years, Brady, Breeze, Roethlisberger, Rivers, etc. You know, last year, week one was impacted by injuries like to Aaron Rodgers. This year's week one was impacted by two quarterbacks who have thrown a lot of touchdowns who are coming off serious injuries in Cousins and Rodgers who are still trying to work their way back into it. So I think all of that adds up. I'm sure that there are defensive, you know, we've seen the two deep be an answer a lot of times over the years. Really hard to get explosive plays against Tampa 2 or any sort of, you know, cover 2 that's deep cover 2. We've seen that for years. You know, what has to happen is when you get into the red zone, it's easier really to score sometimes from the 20 than it is from the 10. And you've got to have quarterbacks and schemes capable of designing plays that get you into the end zone or at least get you to the 2 or 3 yard line where then your opportunities to run it in or run play action or run boot or run dual threat stuff has a better chance. First and goal at the 10 or at the 8 or first and 10 at the 11 or the 12 on a super condensed field has been difficult to score on for a long period of time. And the teams that end up ultimately doing well with it are the teams that end up having quarterbacks that can extend plays in the red zone. You know, especially if you're throwing the football into the end zone from that point. You've got to be able to make them cover for longer on that condensed field. But I think what you typically see is you see teams start thinking about trying to score touchdowns from the 20 and even the 15 because it's easier than when you're at the 10 or the 5 sometimes. A lot of the times. But anyway, all right, you've got five burning NFL questions for me. Fire away.
Yep, I got five burning questions. Hopefully you have five answers, but the topic you just discussed is actually one of the questions I have for you. All these questions are formatted kind of differently. This one's an over-under. Over-under 3.5 quarterbacks that'll pass for more than 4,500 yards this year.
Over or under 3.5 quarterbacks that will throw for 4,500 yards?
There were three last season.
Who were the three? Goff?
It was Goff, Prescott, Dak, and Tua. Tua was Mahomes. The leader. Oh. No, Mahomes. Oh, Tua was the leader. It was Tua.
Tua. I'll go under. I'll go under. When was the last season that we had under three 4,500-yard passers?
It was a while ago. As I did more, so we had four in 2022. We had six in 2021. And then five in 2020. I kind of stopped doing the research after that. But I thought last year, because many people, we thought that was just going to be the trend, and last year kind of broke the trend with only three. So maybe that happens again this year.
That's an interesting one. I mean, right now, I'm just thinking, like, I'm pulling up the stats, but I'm going to assume that Stafford leads the league in pass yardage. Am I right or wrong? I'm wrong.
You are wrong.
It's Purdy after two games.
Yeah.
Stafford, Minshew are next. So you're talking about averages of 266. What were the averages last year? Yeah, that would be an indication you're going to have at least two or three. So maybe I should have said over, but I'll stick with under. But that would be obviously unique for it to be under. What's next?
All right, question number two. I'm going to give you three teams. You got to tell me which of these three teams is most likely to miss the playoffs. The 0-2 Baltimore Ravens, the 0-2 Cincinnati Bengals, or the 1-1 Dallas Cowboys who play the Baltimore Ravens this week.
The most likely to miss the postseason. Well, in our buy and sell, I kind of sold the Ravens here early, but I didn't sell them from a playoff spot. I just sold them from being one of the best teams in the AFC this year, like they were last year in the regular season.
Because if they lose to Dallas, the numbers for 0-3 teams are pretty drastically awful.
I mean, the Bengals are 0-2. They have Washington and Carolina as their next two opponents.
You want to talk about two get-right games.
And by the way, they play the Giants in 3 weeks.
So they'll be 3-2.
I'll go with what I think would be the longest odds of the three. I'll go with Baltimore.
Okay. All right. You're gonna have some of the Baltimore fans a little upset about that one. All right, question number three. It doesn't bother you, not at all. After beating Detroit, Tampa Bay needs to be viewed as one of the top teams in the NFC, along with the Lions and 49ers.
I think Tampa Bay's good, but I don't think that they're the 49ers, or I know they just beat the Lions. They're. What is the question specifically?
They will jump from being viewed as kind of like a second or third tier NFC team to being a top tier NFC team.
No, they're going to remain a second tier, but second tier is okay. I mean, they won 9 games last year and won the division. They can win 10 or 11 this year, but it's not going to ultimately be, I think, where the 49ers or where the Lions or the NFC East winner is. So I'll say second tier, top of that second tier. I like the Bucs a lot. You said it earlier in the show. You know, before the season started, the NFC South was, I guess, perceived to be, with the AFC South, the worst division. And right now you've got, you know, two teams that are undefeated and a team that pulled off an amazing comeback on Monday Night Football that was the favorite to win the division just 2 weeks ago. What else?
All right, question four. This one very similar, yes or no with elaboration. The next two, the final two questions will be that. We've talked about this a little bit today already, but does Russell Wilson start a game for the Pittsburgh Steelers this year?
Yes, he will, but it'll be because Justin Fields gets hurt, which has happened to him previously. So I'll say the odds are that he will start a game this year, but I don't think it's because he's going to start over an ineffective or he's the starter before the regular season and now he's healthy and you don't lose your job to injury. They're much better off not only this year, but long term with Justin Fields being the quarterback. But we know that Justin Fields doesn't necessarily, you know, stay healthy. He has not played, I don't think, a full season yet in the NFL. So I'll say yes, Wilson will end up starting a game, but it'll be because of injury. What do you think? You think Wilson's going to start, don't you?
I am worried that they're going to start. Now, him starting because of a Justin Fields injury is drastically different to me than him starting because they make the decision of the, like, kind of what you mentioned, like you can't lose your job that I don't know that he ever actually won due to injury. I think pulling the plug on Fields unless he starts to play awful is a bad move in favor of Russell Wilson.
I have a question. Are you done with your five? Was that five?
That was four, but I'll take questions.
Okay, no, give me five, and then I've got one for you.
All right, so this is a very similar question. Do we see, after being placed on IR for his third concussion in his NFL career, it was a scary game against Buffalo, do we see Tua Tagovailoa start another NFL game?
We do. Yes.
Should he?
That I don't know. I mean, it certainly would seem like when you have that kind of wealth that you shouldn't, because it's risk. Whether you know, he's going to be cleared. Okay,
he will
get cleared,
yeah,
to play. And that, by the way, is going to bring into that. You know, and I talked about this last week. Going to bring into that into the conversation the guaranteed contract dollars for injury, because if he's cleared, well, then the 176, which is guaranteed for career-ending injury, isn't in play. Should the Dolphins give it to him anyway if he decides to retire? I don't know. That's a pretty big precedent to set. He did get 93, I think, guaranteed, but I think he will play again. I think these guys are, this is just what they do, and it's, you know, it hurts more to not take the risk in you know, when you're that young and you look at it, and, you know, there will be a neurologist or five that will say, we don't know. We don't know what this means to you long term, but you're good to go now. So, yes, I think he'll play.
You know what Tua would be really good at, should he decide to hang it up? I bet he'd be great on television.
Would he?
I think he would. I think he's a strong communicator. He's a likable dude. You got the nice smile going on. I think Tua would be really good on television, should he pursue it.
All right. I have a question for you. It's Washington related. I'll give it to you on the other side of the break. But first, I do want to tell everybody about Window Nation's amazing September savings opportunity. If you've been thinking about new windows, now's the perfect time. Window Nation leads the industry with an impressive 96% customer satisfaction rating. That means when you choose Window Nation, you're getting top-notch quality and outstanding service every step of the way. Replace your old drafty windows and enjoy up to 40% savings on your energy bills. It gets even better. Window Nation offers an unbeatable lifetime warranty. That's their promise that your new windows are built for years to come. Right now, take advantage of an exclusive offer. Buy two, get two free, no limit. That means you're paying half price on the windows to begin with. But you don't have to pay anything right now. You can go zero money down, zero payments, with zero interest, 0% interest, for 2 full years. Don't wait. Call Window Nation today to schedule your free in-home estimate. Visit windownation.com or call them at 866-90-NATION. And remember, to get this special offer, just tell them that Kevin Sheehan sent you. So through two weeks... of the NFL season, the offensive rookie of the year odds, Denton, have changed. Caleb Williams was a sizable favorite before the season started, and now, basically you have two co-favorites. You know, if you take a blended kind of average of about five or six sports books out there, Marvin Harrison Jr. is plus 300. Jaden Daniels is plus 300. And that's followed by Caleb and then Neighbors and Brock Bowers. So right now, if you had to wager on Offensive Rookie of the Year, who would you wager on?
I would wager on, especially those odds, I'd wager on Malik Neighbors. I don't think they're going to stop throwing him the football like crazy, so I think he's going to accumulate a ton of yardage. Regardless of who ends up playing quarterback for the second half of the year, if Daniel Jones inevitably gets benched, I think Neighbors at that number is probably the best bet.
I actually think that Jaden Daniels is the best bet. I mean, if you look at Offensive Rookie of the Year winners, lots of quarterbacks here recently. Stroud last year. 2 years ago, it was Garrett Wilson. And then Chase before that. But Herbert, Murray, Prescott. It tends to be, though, a receiver more than any. I mean, it's not going to be an offensive lineman. The last running back to win it was Barkley in 2018. So I would go Jaden Daniels here, but I like your Neighbors, especially at the price. You know, Brock Bowers may be the real play right now at like a blended average at, of plus 1,000, because he's going to end up with, you know, at this point, he's going to end up with 90 catches, right? Every bit of it.
Probably 100 at the rate they're throwing in the football.
What does he have? 15 catches in two games. So,
and he's been thrown like 30
more than 100. Yeah. I mean, it could be Brock Bowers. That might be the best wager right now, because I think they're going to be a decent team. And with Minshew, younger, you know, a quarterback that loves to throw to the tight end. I don't know. If Arizona continues to score like this, it could be Harrison Jr. But I'll give the quarterback the edge right now, Daniels. I may fire in on Brock Bowers. I'm actually looking right now at a plus 1,600 on Bowers for Offensive Rookie of the Year.
16-1 is pretty good odds. For a really good player, 16-1 is pretty good odds.
Yeah. All right. Thanks to... Who did we have on the show? We had Scott on the show today. We had Dan Pizzuta on the show today. He was excellent. Thanks to both of them. Thanks to Denton. Up next, it's Chris with Linnell.
Correct. It's a Windbag Wednesday.
Don't say that. I can't wait to listen.
No, that's what it's called. It's called Windbag Wednesday.
Oh, is that what they call it?
Yeah.
No. Okay. I thought that was a slight constructive critique of the show. Chris and Linnell next.
It's not just about watching the game. It's about betting on it. I'm Mike Valeni, and on Cash the Ticket, Jim Costa and I break down every college football and NFL matchup like it's the last game we're ever going to watch, from the best bets to the sneaky underdogs. And of course, as my co-host likes to say, the value. And the one thing we're not going to do is pretend we're professionals. We have fun with it. It's an entertainment product, and it makes watching games a hell of a lot of fun. So Cash the Ticket, follow it in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.